Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Unused Substitutes. You are listening to us for a straight-to-podcast episode this week, since the Rowdies were in Tulsa for our regularly scheduled evening, and since it was a central time zone game, not a lot of time afterwards to record a show, so we decided to go ahead and just do it the day after. I am Stephen Cundiff. I am joined by Matthew Cox. We are your Green and Gold Gospel, your best source for year-round Rowdies coverage. We are part of the Beautiful Game Network and presented in part by Roughneck Scarves and Taco Bus. Our Patreon executive producer for this episode is David Klabo, and we thank you as always for your support, David, and for all of our Patreons. You guys are amazing. We appreciate everything you guys do and the support you level out to us. If you want to tweet us during the week, let us know your thoughts. If you have some comments you want to share with us, thoughts you want to share with us, at Unused Subs Pod on Twitter is the best and number one way to get a hold of us for absolute sure. If you want to interact with us sometimes during live shows and things like that, also don't forget, like we do Twitch and the pregame shows in front of home games, you can always interact with us live while we're on the air there as well. Matt, first of all, sir, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I was doing good. And then I started remembering the game from last night and I'm not quite as good. It's weird because it's one of those games, and I guess, you know, it's not even fair to call it weird. It should feel this way. Like, we got a point out of that game. Like, that put us a point ahead of Miami and a couple points ahead of Indy in the standings. It did not feel like a positive result for the night.
Yeah, I have things to say. I have lots of things that I want to say. All right, so... last night, as we said, Rowdies played at Tulsa, and first of all, you can't really go into this without first starting with the tragedy that took place in Tulsa. We want to say just our thoughts and prayers are with everybody that is affected by what happened there. Like, that was really unfortunate. Like, just the fact that like that happened the night that the Rowdies were there, that just really was hard to sometimes concentrate. I'm sure if you were in Tulsa, it was impossible to concentrate on what was going on the soccer field that night. So our thoughts are with everybody that was potentially affected by that. And then we have the game itself, and it's an interesting dynamic because the Rowdies don't play bad by any stretch. We get a goal in the 17th minute. Lawrence White comes through a play and cleans up a ball that comes off the post. finishes it to make it 1-0. And then the 83rd minute, Rodrigo da Costa scores an 83rd minute after a ball kind of squeaks on right through for him after a collision between a defender and another Tulsa player. And the game ends 1-1. There's so much to talk about with this match. So
I just want to say, I don't want to pretend to have any actual useful knowledge or insight or anything, but when I saw da Costa get subbed on, I had a very bad feeling.
Sure. Sure. I mean, if you look at it, right, da Costa is one of their, I don't want to say longer term players, but he's one of their better known players on that roster. If memory serves, for some reason, I'm wondering, did he score against the Rowdies in the playoffs last year?
I think he scored the second goal, the really, really good goal.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm pretty sure that was
at that point until
bottom fell out.
Three more, yeah, in the last 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very I thought that was the case. All right. So let's start off with saying that, hey, there was some player news too in the last week since we were here. Because that player news was on the field against Tulsa. So let's kind of do some lineups. Obviously, CJ Cochran was in net. Now, the funny part about that is that a story came out that they were recording a, you know, potential Golden Glove of the Year awards. And CJ Cochran, like, I think going into that match was in second place behind the Louisville goalkeeper for Golden Glove, which mm-hmm. was hilarious to me, considering how hard of an April we had and how many goals that Ryko had go in while he was in net. It felt really, really weird looking at the golden glove standings to see CJ Cochran as the second best average in the league. Like, that was really, really, really strange and just kind of jarring in a lot of ways. But he gets the start. Your back line is Guillen on the outside playing as captain again. Scarlett again is in the middle. And then our new guy, Venkay Azile.
I was really glad just this game happened last night, not just because it's been a little while since we had a game, this weird thing of like 2 weeks on or 2 weeks off, play a game, take a week off, play a game. But also because I needed to hear someone pronounce his name, and I didn't want to ask like publicly myself. I was like, I'll just wait for the broadcast, and a couple people who have, you know, likely done this before will get it across, and I'll hear it once or twice, and I'll be good. My favorite part of the evening was the captions for the match. Like, couldn't get Armin right. I saw it like three different ways, but nailed Venkay Azile's name, which I think we both just now said it three different ways now too. So, I was excited to see him play. He was kind of the one I was keeping an eye on the entire game, and did not disappoint. Like, you know, John from USL Tactics has tweeted about it. Thought it was a great move. Thinks he's a natural fit for what the Rowdies are trying to do in defense and the back line. Posted some clips today about him in the game and how he is a just the ideal fit for this system. Feel a lot better in terms of our defense. I'd feel a whole lot better if I refrained from lamenting about the result of the game because certain people who may or may not work for the league would then scold me and tell me how it's great because our XG was like 2.65. And for some reason, when you look at the scoreboard and it says one, like, that to me seems like a more important number. So many chances. And, you know, and we'll go into this, I'm sure, in a little bit. You know, Neil says, you know, it's nice to nice to win games 5-1 or 6-1, but sometimes you've got to be able to grind out a 1-0 win. And sure, you do, but we shouldn't have had to last night. And yeah, there are games here or there where that becomes a necessity, but yeah, we've kind of gone back to not getting the bounces, to putting things off the crossbar, to, you know, the post, or to guys just not being there. Even Lucky wasn't last night. I mean, that was his spot. That was you know, Guillen, Lasso elevating M. Kosana. He's in the right spot and just couldn't get it there. Luckily, like, Tulsa had – it's weird. If you look at Tulsa's XG, it's like less than one. They had so many clear opportunities where they either booted the ball like 90 degrees to the other way or like 13 feet over the crossbar that it probably should have been a lot higher if they could have actually put a ball on target.
Yeah, there's okay. Yeah, we're going to be talking about this game for a while. All right. So looking at midfield for the starting 11 here, Sebastian Delgaard, Jake Arriman, Lewis Hilton, Lawrence Wyke. That's pretty standard fare at this point. We're used to seeing that. Up top, you've got Leo Fernandez and Jake LaCava, and then Kyle Gregg as the third striker. Now, all right. So that's your starting 11. First things right off the bat. First, basically, like, event of the game, besides the really bogus yellow card against JJ Williams on Tulsa in the second minute. I thought that was a stupid call by the ref. But anyways,
I was okay with that one.
Well, I mean, sure. Here's, first of all, we got to start with this. Kyle Gregg has to be, at this point, like the most snake bit Rowdy's player on the team. That man, he cannot score a goal. He just can't. He can't score. Well, wait, more than one, right? Because I think he's got one on the year, but he's missed one-on-ones with the goalkeeper. He's missed breakaways. He's missed like shot after shot after shot. And then in this game, hits the post more than once, right?
Because he had the shot that hit the post that White cleaned up for the first goal.
Like, that guy, he, oh my gosh. You almost wonder if you were to look up the numbers, you know, one of the conversations that, you know, from a few weeks ago that I think John Morrissey had done on his website was like the talk of what teams are underperforming or overperforming compared to their XGs. And this has been one of the common themes with the Rowdies is you've got this very high XG number for offense, but then like the actual goals scored is something like 7 or 8 goals less than that. I almost wonder at this point, what percentage of that difference is literally Kyle Gregg? like is at this point, is he like literally 50% of the expected XG that hasn't been scored yet?
And I feel awful for the guy because, you know, it's on his mind too. It has to be at this point.
Of course it is.
This was kind of what he was brought in for, is this senior proven goal scorer, you know, not going to give you a 20 goal season, but you put him in a certain spot, or you use him as rotation for, you know, weeks like these where you have multiple games and he's, you know, give him a chance. He's going to get you a goal. Like, at this point, they need to find out what his favorite song is and start playing it on repeat, because dude is just cursed and I'm scared what might happen.
Man, it's like watching Carl Court and Maicon Santos all over again. It's like these big guys that are getting the ball and just like can't do what they need to do more than like one or two times.
It's terrifying. He's going to start levitating above the field and no one's going to be able to wake him up.
Yeah. Yeah, that is like Gregg is just having it's like such a dumb start because, or I still consider this start of the season by, you know, for the long run here. I mean, we've still got 20 something games left, but like, I mean, at this point, like that has to just be super, super stupidly frustrating. And I feel bad for him. Like, he's making the right runs. He's getting the shots. He's reading the play. And it's just that last touch is just absolutely betraying him every time.
Yeah.
And it's insane. It literally is insane at this point, just how unlucky he is. And it's funny because, like, from a coaching perspective, that makes it hard on you too, because do you keep putting him out there and hoping he finally breaks through that shell and suddenly becomes like a goal scoring fiend, because once you, that dam breaks, just for some reason, everything just starts going your way.
Right.
Or do you keep rotating in, you know, Steven Dos Santos and Seba Guenzadi and these other players to potentially partner up top with Jake and Leo? And I you know, from a coaching perspective, that's not an easy decision to make.
Nope.
You know, you can see the fact that Lee and the coaching staff have done the right thing so far. They give Greg a couple games. He has some moments. He doesn't score. Okay, we'll have you sit for a couple, like one or two games now. Now we'll rotate you back in. You'll get a starting role. We'll give you a full 70 or 80 minute shift. Let's see if you can break through a couple games in a row. Then they rotate him out. So I like the fact that I think that's the right way to go. I don't think you just stick with somebody waiting for them to wake up when you've got quality players that can potentially replace. But the fact that they keep giving him multiple chances is evident of the fact that he is in the spots he needs to be in. Arguably, let's put it this way. You look at the scoring chances that he's had this year, and what, he scored one goal. What has Steven Dos Santos done this year? By comparison, his offensive output is way less, in my opinion, than Kyle Gregg has so far. And obviously not in the context of goal scoring in particular, but like actual shots on goal, shots in general. You know, like Steven has not really been able to get a lot of quality offensive opportunities, especially weighted against last year for him. Because like that was the big revelation with Dos Santos last year, was like it wasn't that he was this just target guy that could contain the ball, control the ball well, fight off multiple defenders, and then lay it off for somebody else. It was like if he's left one-on-one, he can just bury it himself. And Dos Santos hasn't been able to really break through with that mold this year at all. So you know, you look at this from that perspective, like that coaching perspective, and you're like, man, this is just, I've got a great forward from last year who hasn't found his mark yet, and I've got another guy who's just absolutely snake bit to hell. And you're like, is there really a right answer here?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Lawrence Wyke, thank God, you know, this was something that we talked about when, you know, for the last several weeks. You know, losing Castellanos and forcing players like Connor Antley or Lawrence Wyke on the back line, you know, it changes the rest of your field. It changes your midfield shape and aggressiveness completely, because those guys were important players up the field and on this team. And, you know, again, you immediately see that, right? You know, you sign Thomas Van Kaziel. You can push Lawrence Wyke into a midfield role because now he doesn't have to play defense. And look what happens. He's all the way up, you know, following up the play correctly as an attacking midfielder should, and is right there to clean the play up. That's exactly where he needed to be. Exactly where he needed to be. So, you know, that kind of proves what we were saying about the defensive shape and like how some of these things affected us in ways that weren't quite so obvious.
Yeah, I'm just taking a look at the stats over right now. So both Dos Santos and Kyle Gregg in the league alone, not counting Open Cup games, both have one goal. Similar in shots, 15 shots for Kyle as opposed to 12 for Steven. Where you see the big difference is of those 15, Kyle's had 7 on target. Steven's only had 2. Mm-hmm. So they're like shot on target percentage. Kyle's at a 46.7, Dos Santos at a 16.7. I mean, the big takeaway, neither one of them performing at the level that we hoped they would, or that they probably have expected to themselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing too, I want to double check something, because now this really kind of has my curiosity peaked between the players. Yeah, one thing to think about when you're looking at Dos Santos's numbers versus Kyle Gregg's numbers is minutes played. Steven Dos Santos has 571 minutes on the field so far. Kyle Gregg is like almost half of that at 332 minutes. You know, Kyle has started half as many games as Steven has over the year. Now, granted, they're similar in appearances overall, but like that numbers of minutes played is pretty significantly different. So the fact that like Kyle has the numbers he has, and think about this too, depending on who you go to, I'm pretty sure shots on goal does not include shots off the post. So if you look at that figure, now granted, it sounds weird. You're supposed to shoot it on frame because that's considered to be on goal. But in reality, off the frame itself, depending on where you go, doesn't actually count. I always find that weird that some people do that, but it is what it is. So when you think about it that way, like Kyle Gregg's numbers, could he be even better hypothetically than what it is right now, even by like a percentage point or two or whatever? Like it could be even better. And I think that's the thing that's crazy about this year is that Kyle has actually been producing at a high rate and just for some reason doesn't have the goals to go with it. And it's such a strange phenomenon to see how that kind of, you know, manifests itself. Now, as much as I, you know, we'll talk about offense later in the game here, but the next major event from this match after the goal is scored happens in the 37th minute and, or more like 30, between the 30th and the 37th minutes. And that is that Jordan Scarlett picks up a knock, you know, collision of players. Looks like he splits his like eyebrow open. Obviously, there's probably some swelling involved there that eventually, like, Jordan's like, hey, it's 30 minutes into a 90-minute game. Guys, I can't see. Can I just come out? More than likely, that's probably what it was, if we're being honest.
Frustrated when he was coming off, like.
Yeah, right? Like, it's just one of those things where, like, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, that's just stupid, right? Like, I feel great, and I literally can't see in my right eye. Like, that's just really, really stupidly annoying. So Scarlett comes out. Game goes on. And yeah. Now let's fast forward to the 81st minute. At this point, there's not really a whole lot going on. You have some players sub in. We changed the entire offensive line. You know, Lokava comes out, Gregg comes out, Fernandez comes out. And then Guillen, on a non-contact moment, looks like he basically pulls like a hamstring. Hopefully it's nothing Achilles related and it's just a hamstring muscle injury. Not even on a bad part of the pitch either. Like it wasn't like he hits like a tuft of grass on the makeshift surface over the diamond in this baseball stadium of trash horror.
He didn't pick it up sliding into second.
Yeah, right. Like it wasn't something crazy. It was literally just jogging off of, you know, jogging off the ball, rolling off the field. He's just kind of jogging, following it up. And all of a sudden, he collapses. Mm-hmm. Which you got to imagine, there's no way you just recover from that in 3 days. Like there's no way Guillen's playing this weekend, right? Like I don't. That to me sounds super far fetched that you could actually see Guillen this weekend after something like that.
I didn't want to say it out loud, but my first thought was, you know, because the way it happens, he's chasing the ball out to the end line, and then you know, kind of goes down right near the edge. I kind of wondered for a moment if he was quite possibly trying to consume some time from the clock. And get a little rest down there. But the way he was being treated and being stretched out, I don't think that was the case. It did cross my mind for a second that would be an opportune time and location to do something like that. But I don't believe that was the case.
Yeah. And, you know, at that point, you know, Guillen, you know, he suffers the injury. They go ahead and sub him out. And now if you think about it at this point, we don't have a defense at this point, right? You know, you've got Venkayazil, who's literally playing in his first game with the Rowdies. And then what else is back there at that point? You know, like your defense at that point, like I don't even know who's actually playing in the field at that point. If we're being straightforward here. you know, it's super, super weird. You know, what the Rowdies team looks like. And then, of course, what happens? Weird play develops and, you know, you get this weird collision of players. The ball happens to just squirt out of a collision and right into the path of Rodrigo Da Costa. And Tulsa finishes the only shot they put on frame the entire night. And that just sucks. It sucks for CJ Cochran. It sucks for the Rowdies. That's a heartbreaking moment because, like, this isn't the defense. You're literally looking at a USL championship team at that moment that's literally not playing with defense.
Yeah, we had so many attacking players out there trying to get that go-ahead goal. And I literally was in the process of typing that I strenuously suggest scoring a second goal when Da Costa scores the equalizer. And it's just, you know, it's one of those. Tulsa had so many chances during the game that they had shot themselves in the foot over and over and again. Mm-hmm. And boy, I kind of criticized the announcer last night for saying dodged a bullet and maybe shooting
something.
But they had so many opportunities that they screwed up on their own. You knew at some point they were going to get a good one. And there it was, like, and so many offensive players out there to try and get there because you knew a second coming out to the second half. I knew it wasn't going to end as a 1-0 game. Either we were going to get a second and then maybe a third. If Tulsa was pushing to get something on the board, or they were going to get something and we were going to, you know, fight. And that felt more likely that we were going to give up an equalizer and we were going to then have multiple opportunities that all were for naught. And unfortunately that's how it played out. Cause it's one of those, I don't know. It's kind of like muscle memory to a couple seasons ago. Like that just, you felt that equalizer come in, you felt the opportunities that we were going to have with the players we had out there, but also kind of had a idea that more likely than not, weren't going to convert any of them because if we were, we would have done it earlier and wouldn't have been in that situation.
Yeah. Speaking of opportunities, Tampa Bay Rowdies end the match with 9 shots on target. 9 shots. And, you know, we talked about this, like, you know, Tulsa squandering a lot of their opportunities. There were so many moments that they're driving down the field. Now, granted, a lot of those I think were first half, and a lot of those were basically being shots that were taken from, you know, outside. They were essentially outside the box and outside of that crazy makeshift grass over the diamond. Maybe that plays a huge part of it, but you know, they just, a lot of their shots were just weird. Like they had opportunities to dribble, they had opportunities to move up the field, and they just were voluntarily choosing not to, which I won't understand why they were doing what they did. But, you know, neither here nor there. They don't take their advantages. On the flip side, the Rowdies have tons of moments. And the sad part is it's before and after Tulsa ties the game to potentially get that second and really put it away. You know, I the one moment in my mind that really sticks out beyond the shots that hit the posts, beyond some of those obvious plays that we were talking about earlier, the one that sticks out to me the most is a play that after Sebastian Guenzotti gets subbed into the game, there's a play where we do like a pass into the box and he ends up behind the defense in an onsides position and takes like 3 touches before taking a shot or trying to take a shot. And by that time, of course, there's like 3 Tulsa defenders at that point that are around him, and that shot gets blocked and goes nowhere. Bro, that first touch was atrocious. That second touch was just stupid. And at that point, you had lost the play before you could try and touch a third. Nothing about that is the Sebastian Guinzotti we need. Nothing about that is a. I mean, that was. It was funny because, like, in the dichotomy of watching Jake LaCava for the last several weeks, like, Jake wouldn't make a mistake like that. Jake has been very goal first oriented. All my touches are like really pressing forward. And like Sebastian got this pass and like played it like his first touch was laterally to the goal rather than towards the goal. Now, granted, I will give him the exception that the ball may have been unexpected. Okay, that's fine. But why is your second touch laterally to the goal? Like, he literally isn't moving towards the goal in that play. And you're in the box behind the defense. Bro, where's your goal scoring instinct in that moment? And I like that to me was shocking. That was a shocking moment. And then, of course, the game ends with a long throw in. Connor Antley sends one in. It ends up going out past to the far post with some help. And lucky M. Kasana is there. He's there. The defender's behind him, not in a good position.
He's essentially unmarked. The throw is perfect.
And
yeah.
He absolutely whiffs on the play. Now, let me throw this out there. As a completely casual and trash player myself, I have sympathy for him because I suck at headering soccer balls. I am terrible at it. I cannot for the life of me time headers. I can't do it. That either it hits the top of my head or it smacks me in the face every single time. So I'm not saying this from somebody that thinks he can do better. I know I can't, but my God, Lucky. Oh man, you've got to do better there. Like, that was as picture perfect a moment as it was last year against Louisville in the Eastern Conference Final. Oh, that is heartbreaking to miss that play. That was heartbreaking.
Yeah. But I mean, if you want to sum up the night in one sequence, that's the perfect summation of the night.
Yeah.
Had the chances, played well offensively, even with reserves coming into the game later on, created opportunities, did everything right except.
You know, it's funny too, because like you look at the way the game played and like it felt like the Rowdies were comfortable the whole game. Like it, you know, again, Tulsa only had one shot on net and that didn't happen until the 83rd minute. But in the end of the game, they had 57% possession. Like, it didn't really feel like that. Like, it felt like the Rowdies were very comfortable in that match. We were doing what we needed to do. We were pushing the ball up the field. We're getting the opportunities. Like, you know, and I think for Neil's perspective, that's really where his post-game comments of, like, we have to be able to win these 1-0 games. Like you have control of the match. You have to see that out. And it's interesting, too, right? Because, like, we know, because he's proven it once before this season, like, if you have a tight game and you need a goalkeeper to step up and make a play, you know that CJ Cochran is capable of doing that in a match if you're having a bad game. But at the same time, like, if you're having a good game, you have to put them away, too. You know, I'm not going to blame CJ for letting in the only goal from the only shot that he took all night. I'm not going to do that. That's not a fair assessment of his ability at all. That's totally not fair. But yeah, I think Neil's 100% right that like this team needs to be able to see out a 1-0 win. Now, granted, this is a weird circumstance because you've got basically a completely makeshift back line and the goal that got scored was a weird fluke. That was a fluke. It was not an intentional play. It was a defender and a striker that made a collision, and the ball happened to deflect out right in the path of another Tulsa player. and that happened to be behind the back line. Like, that was a really stupidly lucky play on Tulsa's part. And sometimes that crap happens. But this is like what Dan was saying. Like, the bounces aren't going our way. Like, that's a great example of that not happening the way that, like, maybe it happened last year. I said, well, how about this? How about this? Before we jump into that, any final thoughts on Tulsa besides the fact that they, that field is trash?
Just randomly, not even entirely related to everything that we've talked about. Tulsa's got some scary speed on the wing. And I was, you know, here's a team that I think they're sitting at like a negative 10 in goal difference. They're down in ninth spot. This was the first draw they've had all year. They've won four games and lost eight. Like, if they can put it together, they can move up the table a little bit. And this, it just kind of like, you know, last night was kind of a nutshell version of that. Like, they had chances that were horribly finished that, you know, could have put them up or at least on equal footing. They've got the talent there, that's for sure. And that goalkeeper is their reserve keeper that stepped up for last night. Was a local kid that came out of their academy. That kid's got a good future ahead of him too. Like, there's some good talent out there.
Yep. I thoroughly agree with that. I thought he did great. In the make-believe land of the Tulsa. All right. So I said several weeks ago, I'm not judging the Rowdy season until after the Tulsa match. The Tulsa match was going to be my barometer for how the first third of the season has gone. And I think that was always my bellwether for what the goal of the Rowdies team was going to be by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've seen the stretch of games we've come out of. We've had these really good games. Here's where I'm looking at my like end of season almost predictions at this point, based on what we've seen so far after that Tulsa match. We have dropped points to the 13th place team in the conference, the 12th place team in the conference, the 9th place team in the conference. We tied Birmingham at Birmingham to start the year, right? That was a draw.
Yeah.
That's a non-playoff team at the moment. So that's an 8th place team.
Right. And that one, I think you kind of have to factor in the Castellanos injury.
Look. I'm going to get to that all. I'm going to get to that. But here's the thing I'm looking at. That is a lot of drop points against a lot of what is now bad teams.
Yep.
That is the kind of result that will basically write you off of a chance to finishing, like, say, first or second in a conference. That stack of results is what's going to make the difference there. Because ultimately, like, when you look at the end of the year, your first and second place teams are probably only losing like 5 or 6 games all year. And most of those games are almost, if not all of them, are going to be against teams that are basically right there in the top 5 by the end of the year. More than likely. Maybe they'll get upset once in the year, maybe twice at most. When it comes to draws, they might only draw 4 games all year. They might only draw 5 games all year. Most of those are going to be against top of the table teams with maybe 1 or 2, you know, upsets thrown in. That's a lot of lost points that the Rowdies have unfortunately not been able to gather. I'm willing to say at this point that I don't think even a top 3 finish is realistic at the moment based on the games that we haven't been able to pull results from. I think that's kind of where I'm leaning. I think right now, I think we're basically just trying to fight for a 4th place spot by the end of the season.
Yeah, I think
that's about the best that we can do is get in 4th. And at this point, though, that almost seems like a, I mean, I don't want to be drastic about it, but that almost feels like a moonshot compared to what's going on around the league. It kind of feels like a moonshot where it just seems like we're probably just going to be a road team in the playoffs this year. Like, it kind of just feels like that's what's going on with all the injuries that we suffered on defense. You know, like, worst case scenario, Aaron's out for a few weeks, right? Like, that would completely suck. But, like, losing Castellanos at the beginning of the year, having that horrible run of games in April where just the scheduling was terrible against us, maybe that just relegates us to a road playoff team this year because the circumstances are a little out of our hands. Not to mention how poor our finishing has been, where just players are snake bit to hell and the XG is so far down, so far above where we've actually scored that just, you know, if all of those things were opposite, you know, if we had all the goals scored, if we hadn't dropped those points, probably in direct relation to those XGs, if Castellanos doesn't get hurt, we probably are fighting for a first place finish by the end of the year. Like, if all of those things that should be happening are happening, we're probably fighting for first.
Yeah, I'm trying to reconcile a couple of things in my head. Like, number one, I was looking earlier through the results, and the losses don't jump, which is kind of weird because it feels like we've lost, you know, a ton of games. In reality, we've only lost
three games.
We've only lost one more game than the top three teams.
Yeah,
lost already. However, three of the four teams ahead of us have 1 to 2 games in hand over us. Only Louisville at the very top has played the same number of games.
Exactly.
So, you know, on one hand, you look at the number of losses and you're like, you know, we haven't really lost that many games compared to the others. And maybe there's a chance to push up there. It's these games where we've drawn because we have the most draws of any team in the East. Possibly. I haven't even looked down at the West yet. Well, no, Oakland's got 7 draws. Orange County has 5 draws also, but neither of those teams are in playoff contention in the West. We've drawn, you know, the most games of anybody in the East. It's getting some points from those. And I was looking, and I'm going to have to take some time and go through these. I'm trying to decide which was the most frustrating one of these draws. You know, the only game – I'll say the loss that sticks in my head right now is the San Diego loss. That's a game you should at least get a point out of, all things considered.
That would have been nice. That would have been nice.
Yeah, I think a top four is possible. I want to say maybe even a top three or a top two, just because, you know, it's Pittsburgh right above us, 3 points ahead. And, you know, that's a traditionally strong team. Louisville's at the very top because that's what Louisville does. They hover right around near the top. And you've got Memphis 901 and Detroit City. And both of those teams have been excellent this year. Like, we drew at Memphis, and we felt awful about it at the time. Look at the way the table sets up right now. Like, that's not a bad result at this point in time. You know, just like I didn't want to go running out into the streets proclaiming we were back after the Phoenix game because I don't think Phoenix is that good. I felt better after the Pittsburgh game. No offense to Memphis or Detroit, but the track record in Detroit's case in USL, in Memphis' case, you know, in their existence, isn't there yet to say, yeah, that's where they're going to end up. I think it's very likely one of those two teams could be a top three or top two team. I don't know if both of them will end up that way. So I don't know. I feel like it's still a little wide open. Like, top four is something we definitely should be looking at, but maybe a top three is possible. I don't know about getting to second or first. A lot of it's going to come down to, you know, can we get out of this stretch of being snake bit by injuries, by finishing, by the things that we've dealt with this year, which, to be, let's face it, we didn't really deal with any of those kind of problems the last 2 years.
No, we didn't.
These teams above us haven't really dealt with those situations either. At some point, statistically, they're going to have some problems with form. They're going to have some problems with injuries. How are they going to cope, and can we capitalize? So I still want to say maybe a top three seems possible. And yeah, we need to be able to see out some 1-0 games, but we also need to get some wins from games where it's 1-1 in the 75th. Like, the talent is there. I know there's been some changes, but, you know, they've spent some money and brought in like they actually went out and did a transfer, which with a division opponent, like a conference opponent, which was, and you know, it's not like Birmingham's season is over. They're 1 point out of the playoffs right now. And are 4-4-4 right across the board. They're just kind of right there in the middle. I think the expectation is that they're going to go out and sign somebody with that international spot they got from Tampa Bay, but it hasn't happened yet. You would tend to think that if you're going to make a move like that, you've got something else lined up, ready to go. Maybe it's, you know, the ever-present pending league and federation approval, who knows, but I got to believe they're going to make a move for that and we'll see what happens. But how quickly he slots in on the back line, looked really good in the first game. There's likely to be, because there always are, it seems like, growing pains when a player transfers from one team to another. We'll see. As pessimistic as I felt coming out of that game last night, I kind of still feel optimistic overall of at least getting one home playoff game this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it from a points per game perspective, essentially, you know, right now, like third place is three games difference from us, you know, in a certain point of view, you know, with the way those teams have been able to get it, I mean, that's third place, right? Like first and second are even better than that. You know, a three game difference between us and a Louisville, Memphis, and Detroit kind of feels insurmountable right now. Just based on the way the trends are. Like, we're drawing a lot of games. They're not. They're finding ways to win consistently. Like, that, it just doesn't feel like they're going to drop enough points to make that up. And at the same time, it doesn't feel like we can really capitalize on getting it. So like I said, for me, I think it's like at this point, we're just competing for fourth, and I think we'll be happy to finish there by the end of the year. But I kind of almost am expecting not to. I just think 5-7 is more likely at this point. The good news is like, because the way the table has shaken out, you feel super confident that like getting in the playoffs is not a problem. You know, it's something that we were that was being discussed about on a couple of podcasts around the country this year. Is the West top to bottom a better conference than the East? 100% yes at this point. Top to bottom, absolutely. The East is an absolute shambles this year. Charleston, Hartford, New York, Atlanta, Loudoun, and if you want to make an argument for Tulsa, are absolute dog crap right now. Those are terrible teams. Meanwhile, in the West, you've got the defending USL champions in the bottom half of the table with a positive goal differential.
Yeah.
You've got LA Galaxy 2, who beat Louisville. You've got a Monterey Bay, who didn't just beat Louisville, they also beat Colorado Springs. You've got Oakland that has 7 draws on the year. You know, like, that's your bad teams in the West.
That's, you've got Phoenix, who is still a playoff team and hasn't drawn a game all year, but also Phoenix has a -4 goal difference.
Yeah. Like,
when they lose big.
The West is, like, I think for me, the thing is, like, the West is absolutely better than the East this season so far. Like, it's a much tighter race and a much more interesting race compared to what we're seeing in the East. In the East, it's basically, you can already write out almost half, if not half, of the entire conference already from a playoff position by the end of the year. You know, it's almost to that point. You know, Tulsa's on the bubble, but there's 5 teams that are legit out. Loudoun, Atlanta, Hartford, New York, Charleston are dead. Tulsa's on the bubble. Birmingham's in the thick of it, at least relatively speaking. But yeah, like, nothing like that's happening in the West. You know, the difference between 7th and last place, 13th, in the West is 6 points.
Right.
That's wild.
That's 12. Well, and then the other wild thing about the West is if you look at the table, the top two teams have played the fewest games overall.
Yeah.
They've got games in hand on everybody, but they also have large leads. Like, this could just be a runaway at a certain point. But then you've also got, you know, El Paso's kind of sitting there in fifth place, having just transferred one of their most promising players to Real Salt Lake. So how is that going to impact them? Because they didn't get any players back. I thought potentially it was going to be like a sign and loan kind of thing, and he'd still be there for the season, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Yeah, the whole league is just kind of nuts this year.
Which I want to say, I want to point out, because this was definitely something I wanted to mention on the air tonight. Major props to both organizations for getting that deal done and having, you know, El Paso $250,000 transfer fee. That's amazing. Now, granted, they don't see all of that because there's other things that are going on with the contract and where that money goes out because, you know, who he was with the academy years and things like that. So it doesn't all go to the club. But, you know, first of all, thank you, you know, to RSL for making that move, for being willing to spend the money. Like, RSL has had a strange year this year. You know, they haven't been great the last like four seasons. But yet, like, one of the storylines about coming out of Salt Lake this year is the fact that, like, they've sold out, like, every game, capacity crowd, for a team that, like, has been really bad for, like, 3 years. And everybody's around, like, do you guys, like, honestly believe this team is going to do good, or are you just absolute soccer fanatics? And it's just wild because, like, there's so much local belief in the club, and with everything that all the turmoil that has happened with ownership with that franchise over the last several years, you've got, you know, the women's team that leaves because of all the turmoil and everything that was going on, you know, that is really, really good for American soccer that they're willing to take that step in a year that, like, stuff seems to be kind of going in their way already. You know, we keep looking for these, like, watershed moments. Oh, is Louisville selling a player overseas or having him go overseas? Is that the watershed moment for the league? You know, is you know, this guy getting a $250,000 buyout the watershed moment? Is it the Rowdies buying, you know, Van Kaziel from a fellow Eastern Conference team, buying him outright for a transfer fee? Is that a watershed moment? Like, we keep looking for an individual watershed moment. I don't know if we're ever going to get, like, to that point, but just, like, all of those things happening within a 12-month span, I think all of it's important. And I hope that there's opportunity for other players to potentially get bought up in that sense. And I don't know what it will take to make that a league thing. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of MLS teams shelling out 100,000 plus for players, you know, that many times. That's going to be pretty much diamond in the rough scenarios. But, man, do I hope we get to see that more in the future. Like if you were to tell me right now, if Jake LaCava was an actual Rowdies player, like if we held his contract, if somebody from MLS walked up to the Rowdies and said, hey, I want to give you $250,000 for Jake LaCava right now, I would sure as heck hope that we would actually make that transaction.
I mean, who's going to score goals for us for the rest of the year?
For $250,000, that's whatever to me.
A bag of cash is not going to be knocking in goals.
I'm okay with it. Because financial security of a club, I mean, granted, we've got some deep pocket owners, so, like, it's not quite the same equation as some of these other clubs.
Right.
But I will take the cash. I'll take the cash. I'm cool with it.
Well, hopefully we don't have to deal with that situation before this weekend, because I got a feeling we're going to need Jake LaCava against this weekend's opponent.
Yeah. Yeah, this weekend is going to be a pretty tough match. So Yeah, this is going to be bad because a lot of it's going to depend on who we have available for the match. Who's going to be actually out there? How about this? I figured we'll wrap the show up with score predictions for this match. How much do you want to talk about Louisville specifically here before we get into that? Before we do that.
I honestly don't know a whole, you know, I know they got off to a good start. I've been watching a ton of Louisville this year. I know they got off to a really good start, but then they made the mistake of tweeting about how they're the only undefeated team in US and all of a sudden had some really bad looking losses there. They're Louisville. I mean, if there's one team that you really don't have to talk a ton about, it's, you know, we've seen them the last 2 years in the Eastern Conference final. They're back up there at the top of the Eastern Conference again this year. This is, I mean, as much as some of these matches get a little chippy with some of these other teams and how some of these so-called rivalries are occasionally manufactured by the league, this, to me, this is the Rowdy's one true rival. And lately, we've had the edge because of the two wins in the Eastern Conference final. You know, there's all that whole, you know, throw it all out the window when these two teams play. Well, I mean, literally throw it out the window because this year the Rowdies are a much different team than they have been, at least are in a different mindset, different position coming into this game than they have been in years past.
I'd make the argument that Rowdies Louisville in USL is like Manchester United, Liverpool in England. Two of the biggest clubs financially, like in the
fans
league.
Mostly get along. Fans mostly get along, and both clubs seem to be relatively well run, which I don't know you can say about Manchester United at the moment.
Oh, geez.
You'd have to kind of flip it around and say this year, you know, Louisville would be the Liverpool because they're much higher up in the league, and the Rowdies have failed to impress. Maybe we'd be the Manchester United, but I don't even want to use those two in the same sentence. So
I always chuckle. They're such a poorly run organization. They literally finished in sixth place. What are we talking about? As a fan of a second division club in multiple arenas, I can never understand the concept. I think it's just people trolling, and maybe I'm just not getting it. But man, is it wild to me to think that the sixth best team in England is somehow considered a horribly run organization. I just...
I'll have to send you the like short-term pass for The Athletic, because there's a very interesting article in there about the inside the tenure of Ralph Rangnick as the head coach at Manchester United, and how his longtime assistant, who was, and I believe still is, working at a club in Russia, was basically watching the game like on TV and calling in to an assistant coach at Old Trafford to give his advice and his tips. And the manager would not make any moves until he got this information from a guy in Russia watching on TV.
The problem is with stories like that is it sounds so unbelievable it almost can't be true. Like I know the story exists, but it just sounds so far-fetched that I can't believe it.
Sources. And when you see Chris Armas wearing AirPods, that's why, because he's fielding the phone calls. It's insane.
Yeah, there it is.
Like, yeah, they're the sixth best, but and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm willing to bet the gap between them and five was rather significant, and for the money they've spent and the history they have.
I think that's what a lot of it is. Well, like, look at them. I mean, then it's funny because then you got another branch of Manchester United fans that are like, they're not spending anything at all. It's like they're literally the second highest like wage in the entirety of like Europe. But anyways,
I love trolls every time the Bucks sign a player, and I'm like, oh well, I guess United's not getting any new guys this year because Bucks just signed someone. It's so mad.
But yeah, I think a lot of the United talk is just like points per dollar spent type of deal is a bad ratio or something like that. And I'm just like, I don't Maybe. I don't know. It just feels like a weird argument. But anyways, the whole conversation was started on the fact that I was like saying that these two big, you know, traditional rival powerhouse clubs that are consistently meeting each other at a high level of the game in USL Eastern Conference are Rowdies and Louisville. That's why it makes a good United-Liverpool comparison. Urgh.
United finished 11 points behind Arsenal in fifth place.
Fine. Because the Rowdies are going to finish in like sixth place this year too. So my comparison is really, really, really on point, you sir.
No, I do not accept any comparison that equates the Rowdies to Manchester United. I don't care how Neil Collins would like that.
Because the Rowdies are going to finish in sixth place by the end of the year, and Louisville's going to finish in second behind a storming Memphis. So the comparison, sir, is literally perfect.
So does that make Miami West Ham and they're going to be 2 points behind us?
Oh, man. Anyways. All right. Definitely want to give a shout out to our friends at Taco Bus, who proudly deliver a healthy, fresh, and authentic Mexican taste experience to our Florida fans. Just one bite of a burrito, tostado, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs. Visit us today at one of our 11 locations, and remember to keep it chido. All right, Matt, we've talked about the team. We've talked about the positions of the field. I've already given my pessimistic outlook for the year. Let's do score predictions for Tampa Bay Louisville. And I'm going to continue to be a cundiff and be pessimistic about it because.
What a cundiff.
All right, I'm going to show you my cundiff. And that is.
Don't.
That. I'm going to say Aaron Guillen is hurt. I'm going to say that, actually, I'm almost wondering if Jordan Scarlett's even going to be playing, because imagine if his eye hasn't like healed itself completely before this weekend. I think one of them
out there.
Yeah, imagine if you have both of them out because of like freak injuries. Like,
yeah,
I'm going to say this. I think at least one of them is going to be out. And I think that's what makes the difference for this match, because you're also dealing with a third defender that's still trying to get accustomed to the field. Well, not field, but like the team itself. Combined with our absolute, you know, historic ability to just miss wide open shots that should be goals. I'm taking Louisville 3-1.
So a smaller margin than they just beat Tulsa by, because they knocked off Tulsa 4-1 back on May 28th. So they're out of the Open Cup now, right?
Yes.
I was really hoping they were going to continue, not just because of, go Team USL, but because fixture congestion is good. They're out. They have 2 weeks off after this match before they return home to host Orange County. So you're going to get their best possible lineup. There's no need to rest guys for any particular reason. But Rowdies have this like intangible ability, and it's happened, you know, across multiple rosters with different coaches throughout time, that when it just doesn't seem to make sense for them to get a result, like going on the road to Phoenix and ending up 1-0 down in the first, 15, 20 minutes or so, and it just doesn't seem like there's any logical reason to get a result, they pull a result out every now and then. Like, backs against the wall, the Rowdies have done pretty well. Combine that with Al Lang being somewhat of a house of horrors for Louisville the last little while. I mean, the first Eastern Conference final was in Louisville. The Rowdies have done fairly well against there. It's going to be the first return since the Mkhisana miracle from last season. Hoping there's going to be a good crowd. I know people are going to be keeping an eye on the weather right now. Forecasts seem to keep St. Pete in the clear and most of the Bay Area somewhat clear. A little bit of rain, possibly. Wind shouldn't be that big of an issue. Let's get people out there for a big game. We know Louisville fans travel, so we'll be seeing them. All things considered, Yeah, I'm really trying to talk myself into the Rowdies getting all 3 points, but I'm going to have to go 2-2.
All right. Yeah, I just don't see a scenario where the Rowdies can overcome Louisville and get 3 points. Like, Louisville's just, they're on a run this year that seems to be pretty special. Memphis as well. I mean, I can't not mention both of those teams at the moment. And there's, you know, Dan said it best. The balls just aren't bouncing our way right now. And until that, like, obviously starts changing, you know, like, you can't be super optimistic about where the team is headed at the moment. So we all hope that things will be better. I will say this personally, I think weather-wise will be fine. The way everything's shaping out, by Saturday night, we might not even notice anything had happened. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's just a, if the luck can start to turn our way, this team can be scary once again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think that's the thing that's frustrating. It's like, and this is what we were saying about the stretch in April. It's like, guys, we're beating teams over and over and over again. Like, we're outplaying, like, everyone we're playing against. And it's just some bad luck and some fixtures, just, you know, congestion and worn legs, and it's just not working out. But, like, you know, games like last night, the difference in that game was luck. Now, granted, sometimes you have to make your own luck. But it kind of felt like the Rowdies last night made their own luck several times, and it still didn't go our way. You know, the shots that hit off the post, the long throw-in that gets the extra header to make it to the far post, and, like, we have a guy wide open there. Like we're literally making our own luck, and it's still not going in. So, I you know, you got to imagine that Neil with, let's think about this too, right? Like, imagine a scenario where, like, Ian and Scarlett both are out for this match. Do you know how fired up Neil is going to be trying to get that midfield and striker combinations for this match? Like, if that actually is the case, like, I would love to be in that pregame warm-up talk, because he's going to absolutely be on them to play the game of their life.
If both of those guys are out, I want Neil fired up about getting the lucky shin pads back on, because we're going to need him out there on the back line.
Right? Oh, man. What a time to be alive. All right. Matt, sir, any final thoughts on the night before I go ahead and wrap it up?
No. I got nothing.
All right. Thank you to Wolfface for providing the great introduction music that we use, to Radio St. Pete Online for providing us an online platform for live shows when we have that opportunity, to Shamrock and Corrigan's for hosting us in a live environment every now and then, a couple times a year. We do appreciate that very much. If you are listening to the podcast, please share it with some friends, with your Rowdies friends especially. Give us a subscription on whatever platform you're listening to. That way you never miss an episode when they do post. Give us a rating and a review if those options are available. That will help get us in front of Rowdies fans by the algorithm cookie gods. The best way to support the show, if you want to take your commitment to us a little bit further, is Patreon. For something as simple as $1 a month, it's the best way to support us. It helps us cover the cost of subscriptions and everything that goes into running the show. You can go all the way up to $10 a month, and that would help you get a shout out on a rotating basis for being an executive producer level patron, as like tonight with our good friend David Clavo. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you're tired of the same old cookie cutter uniforms and templates from Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for something unique, completely custom for a youth club, maybe it's a Sunday league team, a competitive adult, or maybe even a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Matt, I'm looking forward to the weekend. To everybody else, we love you all, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
I will see you in the undisclosed location on Saturday. And also Corrigan's.
And also Corrigan's. All right. Well, everybody, you guys have a great night. And as always, go Rowdies. The Rowdies are near, the Rowdies are near.